Good morning to you all. Thank you for attending. Let's start, go through the presentation, and then we'll open for Q&A as usual. So in page four, I highlight what I think are the most relevant points of the year. A strong growth of EBITDA and net profit that was confirmed all through the year. A growth in revenues, which is the first time in 6 years. At the same time, we kept the strict cost control. A significant increase in the amount of proposed dividend together with reintroduction of variable pay for employees to compensate the employees also for the good performance of the company. The successful conclusion of the full privatization. Several structural reforms implemented, which we believe will bring relevant future value coming from efficiency, flexibility and sustainability in issues like staff regulations and IT and other areas. Important projects in financial services, the Postal Bank and the Express and Parcels were launched and are being implemented at full speed. In page 5, we just remind a few of the most relevant events of the year. I would highlight, apart from the price increase in the beginning of the year, in March, the partnership agreement with Cetelem, the memorandum of understanding with Altice in November, the full privatization, so the ABB that we did in September 5, the IT and communications procurement process that was concluded, that is already in place since January 1st, and so it's a strong and important thing in decreasing the fixed cost base. And recently, the signing of the new company agreement and the new healthcare benefits plan, also very important for things that we'll go into more detail, but nevertheless, the basic is we are able to decrease the cost and to decrease the responsibilities because of these negotiations. And also the launch of the Postal Bank that we announced back in November. In page 6, we go through the items of our outlook and seeing what we delivered compared with what we had presented. No government involvement in management, company managed for all shareholders. That's done. 100% free float company and proper governance in place. In terms of revenues, we started the year with an outlook of stable revenues, minus or plus 1% growth. Then in the third quarter, we upgraded it to 1 to 2% growth. And in the end of the year, we now see that we have grown 2.4%, reversing 5 years of decline in terms of the like-for-like revenues. This is for us a very important change and a very important year because of this, putting the top line growing and increasing growth and not only efficiency and the bottom line in a positive direction is for us very relevant for the future of the company, and so it's something that we were committed to do and we are committed to do. Ongoing integration and optimization of operations, that is something that started more than 2 years ago, but we kept doing it, and during 2014 important things have happened, and we see the substantial net positive impacts on operating costs, and we will see that more further to the future. In EBITDA, we have a first outlook of low single-digit EBITDA growth. Then in mid-year, we increased it to mid-single digit, and in the end, we have delivered a like-for-like recurring EBITDA at double-digit rate, so plus 10.9% in comparable terms. We believe that this is a strong profitability that we have delivered in terms of increasing EBITDA. We have several balance sheet opportunities in terms of optimization that we have talked about, that we have prepared ourselves, we have implemented several, and this significant balance sheet optimization is implemented with significant cost savings in the future, and it's one of the main reasons in these non-recurring effects that we see in the 2014 accounts that we will explain later on. But they are, of course, in the right direction of decreasing the fixed cost base and of strengthening the balance sheet and our competitive position. And the focus on strong cash flow generation and continuation of attractive dividend policy. We have positioned ourselves since day one, before the IPO, as a dividend stock, and we are committed to that, and we will committed to that. With the growth of operating free cash flow and with the growth in profit this year, we increased strongly the dividend, 16.25%, and we also announced a change in dividend policy, which is targeted to guarantee stability to the dividend in a way that we believe goes on the direction of what we have listened from our shareholders and our investors in the very frequent and close relationship that we have with you all. And so it's something that is designed to increase the to guarantee more or to allow more stability and not anything else. And so we are much more concerned or much more committed to go up with the dividend than anything else. Now we have quite a few slides where we go more deeply into each of the points. I will go quickly through them because we can go deeper in Q&A if you feel that it's needed. The number one, you know, is our shareholder structure. We have free float, we have institutional investors. The top investors, the ones that have announced more than 2% because of regulatory reasons, have 31% of the company. And the remaining 69%, according to our analysis and studies, are also mainly institutional investors from different parts of the Western world. The share price appreciation, you know it, 75% since the IPO, compared with 12% decrease in the Portuguese index. And this is just to highlight a few figures of what you know. In page 8, we show the reported revenues that have grown 2% after the 5 consecutive years of decline. 72% of the revenues coming from mail, 18% from express and parcels, and 10% from financial services. Financial services is a strong growth of 23%. The other two, stable. In terms of mail, the main point is that stability is a change of trend because it was negative in the past few years. And on the right-hand side, we can see the contributions to the growth. Again, 13 million from financial services and about 5 million from mail and other. What we can say is that we increased revenues by 20 million euros in the year, which is something compared with the past performance. In page 9, the issue is about costs, and costs we have to zoom in because of the non-recurring things that are embedded into it. But if we look to the right-hand side, pro forma for EAD, because as you know we sold it in the first quarter of 2014, and so it was in the figures of 13, it's not on the figures of 14, and the non-recurring cost of 60 million euros net, the ones that affect EBITDA, we have an increase of only 0.7%, mainly coming from the staff costs that, as you know, are a consequence of the termination of the salary cuts that existed at the time we were state-owned. And that was cut immediately after privatization in December of 2013. And that explains basically these 4 million that are here, as we stated since the beginning in our estimations. In page 10, I will go a little slower. and here is a first part of what we have to analyze of non-recurring. We have a big thing this year, which was in the last quarter only, which is the change in the healthcare benefits plan. And the healthcare benefits plan, we have changed it because we have open negotiations back in September, and you knew that, with unions and the workers' committee. And we have done it, and we closed it early this year in a way that, number one, we were able to include some mechanisms to incentivize a better use of the system by increasing co-payments and these type of things. Second, we were able to decrease, by capping some things, the total cost of the plan. And third, we were able to change the proportion of the costs that are borne by the company and the employees by the mechanism of co-payments that they have in the plan. And with all these three, we were able to arrive to significant savings per year in the yearly cost. And as you know, we have the post-retirement part booked in our balance sheet as responsibilities. The change to that to those responsibilities has to be accounted in P&L because of accounting rules. And that impact coming from the renegotiation with unions and also a bid that we did to choose a new manager for us of the system, which also produces savings for the company, produced this very strong positive impact of 83 million euros of decrease in costs that we booked this year. The one comment that then the figures will come afterwards, but is, as you know, we have the liability in the balance sheet and we have deferred tax assets also in the balance sheet related to this. And as we account for the 83 million positive, this is partially offset by the cut in the deferred tax assets related to this, which is around 23 million euros. So the net effect of this is 60. Then we also point out the value of reintroduction of variable compensation, both for staff and management. And the total value is 12.4 million euros as it is here. Of course, this will be a recurrent cost in the future because we intend to keep it, and it's part of the staff costs and the management costs in any company. The reason why we put it here as non-recurrent is because we did not have it in the previous years, and now this year we introduced it. It's just to highlight for comparison purposes this figure that is important. And then we have some other non-recurrent, smaller numbers. The actuarial assumptions and the sundry things. This year, as you know, interest rates have come down strongly, this year of 2014. They have come down in the Euroland as a whole, but especially in Portugal because of everything that happened in terms of re-rating of Portugal and the enhancement of credit conditions of Portugal. And so we have to change on the downside the discount rates applied to several things in the balance sheet. And when you put it on the downside, of course, the cost, the present cost increases, and this is the type of effect that are here. So then I will go to page 11, arriving finally to the EBITDA, where on the left-hand side we see that 68% of the EBITDA came from mail, that increased its EBITDA by 5.5%. 28% comes from financial services, that had a big boost of 36.4% of EBITDA. And the remaining 4% comes from Express and Parcels, that has a strong decrease in EBITDA of 30%, and this is related basically to the Spanish operation and the restructuring that we have been doing there. And it's not new, it's not yet ended or finished, but this year of 2014 was an important and heavy year in terms of this. On the right-hand side, you see the different contributions to it. And so comparing last year with this year is 9.9% growth. If we adjust for the EAD effect, is 10.9% growth. Entering into page 12, I pass to André, and he'll take us through the next few pages.
Hello, good morning. Coming to a focus on each business unit. First of all, as you recall, we have in mail business, our focus is to maintain the value of the mail business. And in express and parcels and financial service are our two growth levers, which we want to bring growth to these two levers. Some with more growth in 1 year, the other with more growth in the other year, but the objective is to have them both growing. Related to mail, first of all, looking at the mail, the first important thing to stress out is that the addressed mail volumes declined, slowed down this year to 5.7 at year end, which compared with the 7.3 from last year, give us a good confidence that our targets or our estimates that the volume decline will come down to 3 to 5% on a steady state. It's more or less in line with our perspective, so we are confident that this target that we had settled since the beginning, since the IPO, is something that we are even more confident that we can reach that type of decline of 3 to 5%. Second point, and very important to stress out, is that if you see the revenues of the mail, we were able, with the price increase of 4.1% on average, and with a better mix of products, introducing more value-added products to the clients, we were able to compensate fully the volume decline with the price increase, and with that have a stable revenue in terms of mail, and we will give a detailed perspective on that, even a growth in the revenues of the mail on a like-for-like basis. Last but not least, on the like-for-like basis, because we sold 51% the stake that we had in EAD, so we had a company going out with a comparison with 2013, and we'll look a little bit more about that. Second point in express and parcels, to stress out about Portugal, we need to talk about Portugal and Spain. We will not talk about Mozambique because it's a very small operation in overall terms in our express and parcels business unit. But regarding Portugal, we had double-digit growth in volumes in Portugal, driven by B2C, which put some pressure on the pricing because you know that the B2C parcels coming from e-commerce are the ones with lower prices, so the price on average per unit came down, so we didn't have the same growth in revenues as we had in volumes. But in the fourth quarter of 2014, it was very important to stress out that in Portugal, with the integration of the networks that is happening, we already reached a double-digit recurring EBITDA in the parcel business in Portugal, which is very important. In Spain, we had the strategic repositioning or the restructuring of Tourline is continuing to happen. It's affecting not only revenues, mostly in the first half of the year, but also a bit more in the second half of the year. Last, in financial services, as you know, the big driver of the growth was the savings and insurance business line or product line, with a doubling from last year with 5.5 billion euros of placements. We introduced the classic consumer credit offer in a partnership with BNP Paribas, and we launched the credit cards this year. Board approval in the last quarter, the launch of the postal bank, which is already undergoing, and we'll talk somewhat about that in the slide about financial services. All this, and all these a lot focused on revenues, were done with a very and continuous look at efficiency. Efficiency is very important for the performance of CTT, so we did everything having a strict cost control. What we did regarding efficiency, first of all, you already know that we announced in the middle of the year, we did the renewal of IT and communication, or the new procurement process were concluded with the estimated cost saving for 2015 onwards of 40 million euros. We started in the second half of the year the integration of the mail and express and parcel distribution networks in Portugal, which is target to finish in the last quarter of 2015, but in the fourth quarter of 2014 already showed some results. The first ones are negative because it's the cost of the adjustment, but they are going to start having a positive effect in all, mainly in Express and Parcel, but also in the mail business. The signing of the MOU with Altice Portugal, it's very important to develop and to take more value from our retail network. Not only the postal bank will bring or take the value and the opportunity to grow in our retail network, but also this memorandum with Altice that has a big focus on the retail network, but also to some opportunities in our Express and Parcel business and also in our financial services business. Last, regarding efficiency, the new company agreement brought a lot more flexibility in terms of staff management. It's very important to this point, it's very important because not in 2015, but 2016 and 2017, we'll see a lot of benefit from this new company agreement. Second point, the healthcare benefit plan. Not only what Francisco already said about the benefits that brought to our balance sheet, because we reduced 80 million euros of future responsibilities with the healthcare plan, but as you know, the future responsibilities with healthcare plan, it's present costs, cash costs with the healthcare plan. For the active ones, goes to the P&L, for the non-active ones, goes to our balance sheet. So this will mean relevant savings, which enable us to give the 2% salary increases that you saw that we'd give with the new company agreement. If we go to page 13, regarding the mail business, the first point I would like to stress out regarding the revenues, as you see there, the revenues grew around or were more or less flat, around 0.03%. But if you exclude the EAD effect, that is around 4 million euros, we grew 4 million euros in the mail business. So with the price increase and with a better mix of products, putting a focus on the more value-added products to our clients, you need to bear in mind that inside of the mail business unit, we have the upstream and downstream related services with the mail business, the printing and finishing business and other businesses. If you look at the addressed mail volumes decline, 5.7% in the year, and in the last quarter, 4.5%, the price increase and the mix were able to bring a growth in the revenues in this business. So not only we were able to stabilize, but also to have a growth in a like-for-like basis. Regarding EBITDA, if you look at the EBITDA in the last quarter, it was lower 10% than in last year, basically, driven by three main things. First of all, as you recall, we did the new procurement process of IT and communications. That process will bring us, for next year, 14 million euros cost saving on a recurring basis. But in the last three months of 2014, we had the process of changing the providers, which made us to have double costs, not only with the previous provider and with the new providers, to assure that the transition was done smoothly. So we had around 1.7 million of extra costs with the IT for the changing, and with that, since the mail business is the one that supports a big part of this cost, it was one of the biggest affected by this increase in cost. Second point to stress out, the network integration or the distribution network integration between mail and Express and Parcel brings some overlap of costs during one month or two months when we have our mailman already doing the parcel business, but also keeping the outsourcers in order to assure that everything goes well. But in the future, with the benefits of the cost saving that we get from this, this will not affect the current costs, but in the first month that this is being done, it is affecting the current costs. Last, regarding still this decline in the EBITDA, also in the costs, we changed the PDAs or the equipment that the mailman has to do the track and trace, because the demands and the features that the parcel business requires in terms of track and trace are more demanding than the ones that in the mail business. So with that, we had an extra cost in the last quarter that in the future will mean savings, because we have new equipment, more flexible, and the ones that we need to do the integration of the networks. Those effects are the ones that explain the lower EBIT in the last quarter in the mail business, but it's not something that will continue. The reason that is considered recurring, because the benefits in 2015 is recurrent, so the cost of doing of getting the benefits we consider also as a recurrent. In terms in the full year, we increased 5.5 in terms of EBITDA, and it's important to stress out that the EBITDA margin grew to 16.8%, which is a best in the class in terms of performance or in terms of EBITDA margin. If we go to page 14, Express and Parcels, first of all, talking about Spain, in Spain we had, in the restructuring process, we had two moments in 2014, quite different. In the first half of the year, we lost some relevant franchisees, as you recall. Starting the process of restructuring Spain, some of the franchisees were not coping with the rules that we implemented, so they went out of the network. This happened in the first quarter of the year, and this affected the revenues of the mail business in Spain, the express business in Spain. In the second half of the year, we were able to stabilize our franchisee network. More than that, we were able to compensate with our own sales directly done by our company in Spain, compensate the decline that we had from the franchisees. So you see below in the volumes per region that in Spain in the fourth quarter of 2014, we already had a 10% increase in volumes, which enabled us to reach the end of the year with a positive growth in volumes. But we take the advantage to have all the debts or all the remaining issues that we had with some franchisees that we didn't consider that they were able to pay us the debt. We had the opportunity to take all these to impairment, so we, in the first half of the year, big impact on revenues. In the second half of the year, already recovering in terms of revenues in Spain, but we took the advantage of doing the impairments of all the debts that franchisees that went out of our network, or that they were not able to pay us the debt that they had with us, to take all to impairment. So in the second half of the year, the EBITDA was more affected by this part of the restructuring process. In Portugal, if you see all along the year, below, you see in the volumes, in the fourth quarter we had a 12.5% growth in volume. In the full year, 13.4% volume growth. So it was a stable performance along the year. As we said, in terms of revenues, lower than in volumes, because what is driving the growth is the B2C, the e-commerce, which has lower prices in terms of cost per unit or price per unit. If you look at the EBITDA, it's quite below, 30% below last year, but the integration of the network and the restructuring process in Spain, we expect to start having the opposite effect along 2015. If we go now to financial services. Financial services in terms of revenues grew 20% on the year. Important to recall that you knew that in the last quarter of 2014, the comparison with 2013 was not so much positive, because 2013 last quarter was very, very strong, because we launched the product of public debt, the treasury certificates, with a lot of success. So the comparison was poorer than the one that we had in the first 9 months. But what I would like to stress out, if you look at the volumes per type of product below, you see that in the last quarter of 2014, we already have a positive growth in terms of money orders and transfers. Which means, and this is important to understand all the logic of the Postal Bank, is that the financial services business line grows by a mix or by a portfolio of services. Last year, in 2014, we had a doubling in the placement of savings and a doubling in terms of revenues of savings and insurance, and all other product lines going down. What we need to do in the future, and we are prepared to do it, is having the other product lines compensating lower performance that we expect from the saving and insurance. This is a portfolio of services. Enlarging the portfolio of services is part of our strategy. The launching of the Postal Bank is inside of that strategy, because we believe that this business grows with the growing of the cross-selling of services. We believe that this year, the drivers of growth in financial services need also to be other product lines, namely the money transfers or money orders and transfers, as you see, already grew in the last quarter of 2014, and we expect to have a growth in 2015, and the introduction of the credit cards and a better approach or a more dynamic in terms of marketing approach to the credit products, we believe will bring contribution positive this year to the growth in the financial services. I would like to stress out, in terms of EBITDA, that we had a 15% EBITDA margin. This is only possible because we are leveraging in our retail network. It's a retail network that is a cost base that is fixed, and so if we grow in this product line, we are able to use more and more our assets and the capacity or the scalability of the assets that is part of our future strategy that Francisco will explain. In page 16, to understand the impacts on the balance sheet of the optimization measures, Francisco already talked about the healthcare plan restructuring or revision that we did. It means that we'll have lower costs in terms of staff costs that goes through our P&L. Our active workers will have lower costs, or to the company, will represent lower costs in terms of the healthcare plan. The non-active workers, the retired ones that are in the balance sheet, that are the healthcare liabilities in the balance sheet, we cut down 83 million euros. So you need to bear in mind that 83 million euros, it's the cut in the benefits, future benefits of our retired employees and the future benefits of our active employees when they retire. We have another effect from this revision of the healthcare plan, that is the reduction on the present costs with healthcare plan that we have from our active workers. That it's not in these figures, it will mean cost savings in the current costs each year. Because we had the 83 million euros of savings in the employee responsibilities or benefits in the balance sheet, we had a reduction of 23 million in the deferred tax asset, because this is quite related to the future costs. We have 80.2 million euros of changes in other benefits. Basically, as Francisco said, from the reduction in the discount rate from 4% to 2.5%, and also because we have some liabilities regarding the retirement age of our employees, and we have an increase in one year of the retirement age, so this will mean that we have also a negative impact from that. In terms of EBITDA, that Francisco didn't comment because he didn't tend to the EBITDA level. We have the impairment of all the Tourline goodwill that we have. If you remember, we acquired Tourline in 2005. We acquired with the goodwill in the acquisition, and to have the balance sheet fully offset of any impact of Tourline from the performance that we had in the last few years, we took out all the goodwill that was accounted in the balance sheet. This is only an accounting issue, but it's important not to affect the accounts in the future of the company. The other point that we did the reinforcement of provisions, basically in onerous contracts coming from, first of all, the reduction in the discount rates of the responsibilities, and second of all, because we are doing the integration of part of the upstream business of the mail, and since we put another building vacant with no use, we accounted for around 1 million euros of the future costs of this contract until the end that will finish in 2016. Last, in terms of reinforcement of provision, we increased somewhat the labor contingency provision that we have just to have more flexibility in the negotiations with the employees or with the workers' committee and unions in order to solve this past process problem that we had that came from until 2000, from 90 something until 2006. 6.3 million comes from impairments from the optimization of the express and parcel network that are the ones that are non-recurrent, the ones that were done this year, namely with studies and other things, impairments of some debts of franchisees that are non-recurrent. We had the impact of the 60 million dividend paid in 2014 related to 2013, and in the actuarial gains and losses. Basically, the big effect was the 61 million impact on equity from the change of the discount rate from 4% to 2.5%, which meant an increase of around 18 million euros of the tax deferred assets, this side on the positive side, because the responsibility increased coming from the change in the interest rate. But coming to the last point, the big important thing to refer is that we strengthened a lot our balance sheet. We reduced 22 million of the healthcare liabilities in the balance sheet, but you need to bear in mind that 83 million was a reduction of costs, effective cost, and the 60 million that came in the other side was only the change of the discount rate. So in the future, the saving will come from the 83 million, not from the 61 million. It's just the discount rate that we are discounting this issue. Page 17, just to stress out that the operating free cash flow doubled in the year. We went from 51 million euros to 106 million euros in the operating free cash flow. Even with the increase of the dividend paid in 2014 compared with 2013, we were able to increase relevantly our cash position around 42 million euros, which means that we finished the year with a cash position of 278 million euros, more than 42 million than we had in the last year. This is very important because this has enabled us to increase once again our dividend. And if you consider since 2012, when we came to the company, up until now, the dividend that we'll propose to pay in 2014, the dividend grew almost 40% in these 3 years, which is a good example what we consider that is to deliver the value to our shareholders from the performance of the company, coming a lot from the operational performance of the company. In page 18, it's a sum up of all we talked about up until now. Basically, if you look at the revenues, we had a target of having stable revenues in 2014. We exceeded that with a 2.4% growth in revenues if we exclude the AD. In terms of costs, as I told you, we had an increase in costs, marginal increase in costs, but if you take out the increase in salaries that we had from the becoming private with the reintroduction or the elimination of the salary cuts that were happening because of being a public company, we had effectively a cost reduction in the year. In terms of EBITDA, this meant that we had from our guidance of mid-single digits, we exceeded. We had double-digit growth in the EBITDA level. In terms of provisions, if you look at the reported from the ones that are recurring, you see that in terms of provisions, impairments, we took the advantage of doing optimization of the balance sheet, basically. It doesn't affect the operational or the recurring performance of the company. In terms of financial income, basically, we have the effect of lower interest rates in our application of the funds, since we have a cash-rich position. When the interest rates go down, we have less income. In terms of the income tax, just to refer, very important, that although our tax will go to 51 million euros, in terms of cash taxes, that the taxes that we'll pay in the year are only 24 million euros. All the other income tax effects come from the deferred tax assets, so it will not affect the cash flow of the company in the year. So we were able to go from 41 cents to 51 cents of terms of earnings per share, which enable us to commit with a strong growth dividend for 2014 to propose to the general shareholders. Page 19. If we go to the balance sheet, you see that we were able to reduce 22 million euros in employee benefits. Once again, important to stress, 83 million by a real cut in costs, and 60 million increase comes from the change in the discount rate. So, in the future, if the discount rate comes to the same level that was in 2013, we will have effectively the 83 million cost saving in terms of future costs with this healthcare plan. In terms of cash position, you see that we finished the year with 665 million from money in our balance sheet and applied in banks. Part of it, around 400 million euro, comes from our financial services payables, which is our partners that we need to deliver the money from the business that we do in financial services. But we have a very strong cash position in our balance sheet, which means that if we don't take out the employee benefits, we finish the year with the 275 million euros of cash position. And if we take out the employee benefits out of this cash position, we finish the year with a cash position of 75 million euros, which is almost tripling the value of last year, which means that we are more and more comfortable with a very strong cash position in our balance sheet to have the commitments that Francisco will talk about, our strategy and our commitments for 2015.
Page 20, just to remind that our strategy is to develop in the communication area, leveraging on our competitive skills and advantages that are basically our infrastructures, our financial strength, our operational efficiency, the proximity and reach that we have to the Portuguese population and to the customers, and the human capital that we have on board. And we have our assets that we can leverage on the scalability of it in the three business lines that we develop. And the mail, where we focus on the preservation of the value, and we keep doing it, playing the different levers in the physical and the digital convergence environment that we live. In terms of parcels, capturing the growth and even pushing the growth and coming out of the e-commerce. And in terms of the financial services, strong development of this area of activity, and now the launch of the Postal Bank. And in slide 21, the outlook for this year, where we will launch the Postal Bank in the last quarter. In terms of revenues and volumes, we have an outlook to grow the revenues, also supported by the MOU with Altice, but underlying conditions basically being the structural decline in addressed mail volumes is continuing to slow down. and the double-digit volumes growth in Express and Parcels driven by B2C, we believe will start to show more and more during this year. In terms of costs, we keep the commitment of like-for-like recurring costs to reduce if we take out the Postal Bank, which is a new thing. And the estimated annual savings from the revision of the healthcare benefits plan and the new company agreements are to largely offset the impact of salary increases and variable payment to employees. The 14 million euros annual IT communication cost savings and the integration of mail and Express and Parcels distribution networks to continue. These three are the main drivers of what we believe is the cost control capacity that we still have and will show in the P&L. In terms of earnings, we have an outlook of a mid-single digit growth in recurring EBITDA for the year of 2015. And going forward, the company will aim to pay to its shareholders a stable growth dividend, which is a change of dividend policy, and for the reasons I stressed in the beginning, it's really to give more comfort that the ups and downs of the P&L will not affect, at least in normal times, will not affect negatively the dividend consistency and the dividend that we will pay to our shareholders.
Francisco, and probably to stress out, there were some doubts, and we saw in some comments that there were some doubts about the possibility of the Postbank project to affect the ability to keep up a strong dividend payment. And this change gives us the confidence that we saw, we said when we presented the Postbank that we would not affect our dividend capacity and our dividend policy. So we want to commit and to show that any impact that comes from a project that is under development will not affect our capacity to pay a strong dividend and, as Francisco said, to have a dividend stable growth policy for the future.
We considered that in 2014, with all these non-recurring things that we have been commenting, we have a component of the dividend that is also not recurrent. And we stress the 66 million, which is more or less, 10, it's not more or less, it's 10% above the 60 million that we paid last year, so more or less in line with the growth in EBITDA as the recurring part of the dividend from which we have to think when we plan for the, what we call the stable growth dividend onwards. In terms of the Postal Bank, its implementation is undergoing as planned, with costs in line with the business plan, and the core banking system has already been chosen, contracted, and is being developed, and the HR coming, of course, starting from some key functions, are under procurement, and we have already started hiring a few people in this last month. Things are going, of course, it's a busy time, as in any project of this complexity, but things are going well. Organic launch is continued to be planned in the fourth quarter of 2015. And in the non-organic launch, our intentions are exactly the same that we said back in November. The only new thing is that BCP has decided to start the process of Ativo Bank, and we'll have a look into it if it makes sense. And if it fits the criteria that we have stressed, we will see. The CapEx in Postal Bank of circa 30 million euros this year of 2015, these are included in the global figure of the 100 million that we mentioned since the beginning, so this is not on top of, but just to have, be more specific on something that now we know with more detail. And the remaining business, we continue to have a guidance of 20 million euros of CapEx, as we have done in the last few years. And so the total 50 million coming from these two sources. And we believe that in 2014, the promise has been delivered. But of course, this is just a building block on the way to make more promises and deliver more promises in the future. And we are keen to do it, and we are committed to continue to develop the company and its performance. And so we believe that things are on the right track. but nevertheless, we want to clarify everything that we can, and we open for Q&A from you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please put and make sure that your mute function is switched off to allow you to signal through your equipment. So once again, if you have any questions, please press star 1. Our first question comes from Mr. Christopher Combe of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody. 3 questions, please. First one, you've mentioned that you've included some one-time costs as recurring while deducting all of the incentive-based pay of $12 million per slide 10. In light of all that, what's the appropriate run rate EBITDA in fiscal 14 that we should compare when we look at fiscal 15 in terms of an underlying growth rate? It looks like maybe perhaps between $2 to $5 million of non-recurring costs, and then what element of the incentive-based pay should be considered recurring? Thanks.
Regarding the first question, the part of recurring, we consider it recurring cost, that will mean recurring savings in the future, that we had in the last quarter that affected mostly the mail business and express and parcel, and somewhat also the financial services, because the mainly IT cost is central and they are allocated by each business unit by headcounts, because they are costs that support all the network. Basically, it's around 4 to 5 million euros of cost that we consider that, although recurrent, they will mean in the future not cost but benefits, because the integration cost that we had, it will be benefits or savings in the future. The cost that we had with the overlap of the two providers of IT will mean that we'll have the 14 million euros of savings in 2015. So if you want to take, if you want to look what should be the EBIT of the fourth quarter without these effects, it would be more or less 5 million euros that you should take out. Regarding the variable payment to employees, we believe that, first of all, variable payment to employees is based on performance. One of the biggest measures of performance is the performance in terms of EBITDA and net profit of CTT. So we will only be able to pay to our employees and even to ourselves these kinds of variable payments if we have the results to do it. So this is the first point to stress out. This is not a fixed commitment. This is a variable commitment based on performance. We believe that the value that we have this year, it's a reasonable value to consider for the following years. If the performance goes above our expectations, we can increase this. If it goes below, we'll need to decrease it. So you cannot put a value, fixed value. You need to take that is part of the performance of the company that we'll pay to employees.
And just as a follow-up then, so if we're talking about recurring impacts, you'd add back, let's say, 5 and then perhaps deduct 12 if you assume a comparable bonus to management and staff in fiscal 15?
Sorry?
Give me just 1 second, Chris.
There are several effects. I was trying to understand what you are asking. There are several effects that affect the EBITDA. The ones of the, as Francisco said, the ones related with variable payments are considered in 2014 as non-recurrent because they didn't exist in 2013. For the future, will start to becoming recurring based on performance. We will pay based on the performance of the company. What we said, and it's in the outlook, is that the savings that we'll have from the revision of the healthcare plan and the savings that we'll have with the new company agreement, which gives us more flexibility with our employee management, will enable us to compensate mostly all the effect of the variable payments. But, once again, variable payments will come against the performance of the company. Regarding the healthcare plan, if you consider that we have around 12 to 16 million euros a year of cost, cash cost, from the future liabilities of our employees, the ones that are in the balance sheet, if we did an 80 million euro saving from a 260 million euros of cost, you can do the same, more or less the same percentage of cash cost savings each year. Not only in the ones that come from the future liabilities, but also regarding the present costs of the healthcare plan with the active workers. The change in the revision in the healthcare system for the employees had two basic principles. To share more the cost of the plan between the company and the employees, and to put some measures to have a more rational use of the plan, which means that people use it less for things that they don't need to use the plan. The impact in terms of cost of the active workers and the impact in terms of cost for the retired workers that is in the balance sheet is more or less the same. So in terms of percentage, it will mean more or less the same saving.
Okay, and lastly, just a question on the balance sheet. With a lot of work that's been done on healthcare, is there still scope to monetize that reduced tax asset? And what's your view on the long-term capital structure for the group?
Still in the previous points, also remember that you'll have the savings of 14 million from IT. So we have different impacts in different directions, but we believe that in the end the net effect will be positive in both staff and third-party costs. In this question, yes, there is a scope to monetize it. The possibility of the responsibilities going to the government is over. The probability was small, as I said repeatedly, but now that the year ended, it's over. It was even something that we agreed with the unions as a way to finalize the agreement, but reality was approaching, and so we don't have an issue there. We will look again into it this year, and we'll come to you when we have more clear ideas on that front of the monetization, but it's something that we waited, we suspended because we wanted first to have a renegotiation and so to have a clear view of what we would be able to achieve in terms of negotiation. And now we have a clear view of what are the costs, what are the responsibilities, and we'll come back into it. In terms of the optimal capital structure, we have the same view that before. We believe that we should use the cash we have to invest in the growth, to properly pay dividends to our shareholders, second, to invest in our growth opportunities, and to see how we evolve with this type of level. We are generating cash. We have a strong cash position. So this probably we have to take it another round later. But for now, it's what I have to comment on that front.
Thank you.
Thank you much, sir. We'll go now to Mr. Matthew O'Keefe for Berenberg. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is open.
Thank you. Yeah. Three questions from me, please. One operational, two financial. On parcels, first of all, you talk about a reversal of the profit trend this year as the benefits come through from your restructuring in Spain. I wonder if we should also conclude that there won't be any further restructuring measures in Spain this year or whether there might be more to come. On the healthcare question, I wonder if you could quantify the benefits and the revision in terms of interest savings. You do talk about annual savings in the outlook. Perhaps you could quantify those. And then finally on the dividend, I'm not entirely clear on what the new policy is. Should we think about the dividend now as something that you intend to grow, but growth just a little bit below EBITDA or earnings growth? Is that the right kind of way I should think about the dividend over the next couple of years? Those are my three questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. In terms of parcels, no, unfortunately, we cannot yet say that restructuring is over. But what we can say is that a large part of it is done. We are still working on that front, and some impacts will still be seen in the P&L this year. In the terms of the dividends, what our policy states is that we want to have a stable growth. Then what in practice it means is that we believe that we can pay a very large part of our profits in dividends, and that we even can go above that if needed in a specific year for specific reasons, if that is needed to keep the growth of the dividend. So we don't see it as saving dividends, but on the contrary, increasing the, let's say, the comfort that even with a negative bump, as we have the distributable reserves on our balance sheet, we can use that to keep the stability and the stable growth of the dividend. In terms of the healthcare, I ask André.
Regarding the savings in terms of interest from the healthcare plan, it will be around 2 million euros, basically. In terms of other savings, as I explained to Chris, the better way to try to give this, to have this estimate is if you consider that we pay between what is the active workers and the non-active workers in terms of cash, it represents around 25 to 30 million euros a year of costs. If you take out the same percentage that we saved in the healthcare benefits in the balance sheet, you'll get more or less the cost saving that you can get from that.
Okay, I think that's pretty clear. Just one last question then. When you're thinking about the sustainable growth of the business, and when I'm thinking about it in terms of modeling the dividend, do you tend to think more about EBITDA or earnings per share?
We tend to think more in EBITDA.
All right, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you much, sir. We now go to Mr. Felipe Leite of BPI. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good morning, everyone. I have three questions, if I may. The first one regarding OPEX optimization. Can you quantify the impact of the optimization process, namely on the insourcing of parcel distribution in this year OPEX, and what will be a good medium-term EBITDA margin estimate for Express and Parcels once the process is completed? The second one is regarding the Postal Bank and what is the expected OPEX related with Postal Bank for this year, and the 30 million CapEx expected for this year excluded possible acquisition, is that correct? And last one is regarding the deal with Altice, when you expect to receive the 15 million related with the MOU, and what could be the top line contribution from the future commercial partnerships with Altice, and if it will imply any additional CapEx or OPEX for CTT. Thank you.
Coming from the end, we will receive the first 15 million when Altice takes, in fact, de facto control of the company, so at the closing of the transaction. When the closing of the transaction will happen, we don't know more than the public information. What we know is that the thing that is still pending is the analysis from the competition authorities. Apparently everything else is done. The dates that we listen to are May, June, but what I say is as good as anything else. And the second 15 million is at the time we close a deal, what we call an umbrella deal, with Altice with specific lines of cooperation between PT and CTT. And that will be sometime afterwards, if, as we believe, we will close that agreement. But that agreement cannot be further detailed and negotiated until Altice is running the PT. We have done our part of the work. We have very clear views of from where the levers of revenue and cost and so value creation can come. But of course, we have to discuss it with the other party at the time Altice is running the company. And in terms of what we can count from on top line and bottom line, we cannot elaborate much more than we have already disclosed. In terms of the post-bank, 30 million is organic investment, so no, it does not count on any possible M&A activity. And on the two questions on OPEX, I refer to André.
Regarding the integration of the networks in terms of OPEX, we do not disclose the figure of the saving because, first of all, it will happen along the year, so depending on the speedness of the implementation of this process that we need to do carefully, it will mean more or less savings. The full saving will happen in 2016 when the full integration is done, and we'll give a better view about the savings that we got from that. What we can say is that our target is to have double-digit EBITDA margin in the parcel business in Portugal, which means that it will be between 10% to 14% on an average of 12% EBITDA margin that is able to be achieved with the integration of the networks, because even with the continuing growth of the parcel business coming from e-commerce with lower price, we will have a lower cost network to distribute them, which enable us to keep a strong profitability of the business even with the lower price in the top line.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, sir.
Thank you.
We'll now go to Mr. Andy Jones of ARBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. I've had three questions, since that seems to be the fashion today. Firstly, in your outlook, you do refer in the revenue growth to the importance of the MOU with Altice. Is that to suggest that there is going to be a material contribution of revenue in 2015, or is that just the inclusion of the 15 million receipt? My second question was the Postal Bank OPEX. Where do you know yet where that's going to be booked? Is that going to be in the above the EBITDA line, or is that going to be an associate reporting? And thirdly, on the transactional mail, there was obviously a very strong mix impact this year. I think it was the price mix up plus 7, mix being quite a big component on that. Is there anything that you can do to repeat that in 2015, or should we think of it as a pure price and volume effect with not much in the way of mix? Thanks.
Regarding the Altice agreement, first of all, the 15 million, we are very confident that we'll receive them, so they will have direct impact in the top line. Probably not, because this is an 18-month agreement. It will not come all in 2015, but a big part will come in 2015. We believe, as Francisco already said, we have clear views about the potential of the agreement with the PT Portugal to have benefits in terms of revenues, in terms of costs, and we believe that we'll reach an agreement, so we will receive the second 15 million euros, and the agreement to Altice or to PT Portugal to pay us 30 million euros for this agreement is because the impact of the agreement can be relevant for both parties. So you need to recall that the 30 million euros, it's not an upfront of the potential value that can bring to CTT, but it's an upfront of the potential value that it can bring for PT Portugal. So only if the value of the agreement is above the second 15 million euros that they will pay us, they will assign it. So we believe that it makes sense, the agreement. We have business to do together that can bring value. You need to recall that Altice in France throughout SFR has a partnership with La Poste, which is very profitable partnership. So we are very confident that this will have a positive contribution. This year, big part coming from the upfront, but in the following years also coming from business done together between the two companies.
And to give you a relative size, in 2014 our revenues increased by 20 million. And so we are talking of 15, it's why we highlighted it. It doesn't mean anything else more than that, although we have larger expectations.
Regarding the Postbank, it will be fully consolidated in CTT, but we'll present also the figures without the Postbank and the figures of the Postbank apart, but it will be fully consolidated. This year, since we do not have until potentially the fourth quarter, we will not have the bank, but we'll have an entity that is supporting the costs of the implementation of the bank. We will show what are the non-recurrent costs or what are the costs related with the implementation of the Postbank, but apart from that, we'll not have any difference between what we have today and what we will have during the at least the first three quarters.
International mail mix effect.
In terms of mail, we do not believe that the increase in terms of the mix or the better mix product will continue. We believe it's something that it was happening in 2013. It continued to happen in 2014. It's a possibility. But if we have this year, as we had in the last quarter of 2014, a strong recovery from publicity mail, from advertising mail, it will affect the mix of the products because advertising mail, it's a lower value mail. So if we start having the advertising mail growing because the economy is recovering, we will have a negative impact on the mix of products. But you need to recall that this year we expect a lower volume decline, and we already did the price increase on average of 4% on all the products, and also benefiting from the cut of some discounts that we started in the mid of last year, but will have the full effect this year.
Okay, perfect. And then can I just confirm then, the bank startup costs will be treated as non-recurring until the bank starts in Q4, in which case they will become recurring. Is that correct, or?
I don't think so, but we didn't.
They will be separately reported.
Okay, so they're just accounted as reported, not recurring.
Yes, but nevertheless, you will have a clear view of what are the costs on the bank side because we will report it separately. So they will not be meddled into the rest of the costs of the company.
Okay, and then sorry again, just to follow up on this, there was the suggestion in the Q3 as well that the projections you had already included some of the existing products in those estimates. Does that mean then that you will be separating out those products in this year's recurring EBITDA, or will they stay? You know, will the reporting structure stay exactly as it is this year, including the savings products and insurance products?
This year it will be like that. What we will do when the bank starts really operating is too soon to be too specific, because we are working on that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you much, sir. We'll now go to Mr. Nuno Estacio of BESI. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
We seem Hello. To have lost Mr. Estacio. Mr. Estacio, could you just please press star 1 again and we'll place you back in the queue. We'll go now to Mattia Gergolit of Goldman Sachs. Thank you.
Yes, hi, hello, good morning. Yeah, it's Mattia Gerber from Goldman's. I have a couple of questions as well. Sorry to make again the point on Altice. The first part of the question on Altice would be whether the 15 million of upfront fee or whatever you booked this year, will you treat them as exceptional, like with the BMP upfront fee? So is that going to be excluded from the recurrent EBITDA? I'm just trying to understand, say, how conservative you are in your, you know, mid-single-digit growth in recurring EBITDA, because clearly, Altice on its own, it could be, well, almost 10% of the EBITDA. So is it with or without? And then second point, so this year you by your own words, there is a special or a non-recurrent component in the dividend. If the revenues from Altice, the 15 plus 15, are treated as non-recurrent, is there scope for additional, say, special or exceptional dividends in the coming years? And then one more on the dividend. We read stable growth. It does seem to suggest that you have already a figure in mind of what that growth, you know, could be. Would you be willing to share with us what is that figure? Thank you.
Thank you. So, starting by the last one, I don't think we want to share more than we shared. So,
okay.
I think it's an automatic answer. going to the two questions related with Altice and recurring, non-recurring. In terms of the second one, so if we might think about a dividend higher than normal because of that, yes, we might. But not guaranteed at this stage, it's too soon to be too clear. And in terms of how to treat it when you consider your forecasts on the revenue side and so the impact in EBITDA, I think we should stay where we are in terms of forecast. We are just beginning the year. But of course, the 15 million will have a relevant impact in revenues and a more relevant impact in EBITDA, especially in EBITDA, especially if we don't go ahead with the rest, because we'll have no costs and just revenue. But we are keen that we will find agreements, and so the thing will be a little more complex than that in the impacts in the P&L, and it's too soon to know.
And just to recall that this agreement, it's an agreement to negotiate exclusively with PT Portugal. So this is against doing business with other mail companies. So not treated as recurrent is something that probably doesn't make sense, because when we are receiving the 15 million euros, it's because they consider that it's a price that they are paying us to stay quiet, waiting for them to close the deal and to start negotiating with us the framework agreement. So if we didn't have this agreement, probably we were trying to do the same kind of business with other telecom companies in Portugal. With this agreement, we are seated waiting for our 50 million euros, and if we reach the agreement, the other 50 million euros, but not negotiating with other telecom companies to try to develop the same opportunities.
Understood. Thank you. So, can I just one more quick one? On in terms of, say, tax rate, given the changes in the Portuguese corporate tax laws, what would you be currently guiding in terms of, say, tax rate for the current year, if possible, please?
Tax rate in terms of the current tax rate, it's around... in terms of value, it's around 25 million euros. But just to give you an idea, the tax rate that we have with the changes in the government, it's around 29%, which is 25% plus some other taxes that come into the company, namely the companies that have more than some amount of earnings per year. But it's around 29%. As it's coming down from the fiscal policy of the government, what is affecting that is that each year that the government reduced the future income tax rate, it affects our deferred tax credit, because we'll have less deferred tax credit. But basically, this means that in the future we'll pay less tax.
Okay.
One of the points that I would like to mention regarding this is that, as Chris said in the first question, one of the optimization measures that the CTT has on its pipeline, it's the monetization of the tax credit, because we believe that will be better to have it sooner than later. But before doing the tax monetization, or considering the possibilities of doing the tax monetization, it would be important to revise the healthcare plan in order to see what are our real tax balance or tax credits that we have in the balance sheet after the revision and the cut in the cost of the future employee benefits.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very well. Thanks, we go sir. Back to Nuno Stas.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have any questions, please press star 1. We'll now go back to Mr. Nuno Estacio of BESI. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi. Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes. We could yeah. at okay. the beginning, but then you were cut off.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So just coming back to the OPEX level, just to understand, you will have still some of these duplication of costs during 2015 as you do the integration of the networks. Can you indicate us how much it could be, the impact?
The impact will be positive because we are starting to get the benefits of the integration, so the cost of duplication will be more than offset by the benefits of the integration that is already being done. When we started this process of integration and duplicating, it was negative because we didn't have yet the benefit, but only the cost. For 2015, we do not expect any negative impact from the duplication, because it will be offset by the benefit of the integration. And as I said, when some time ago someone asked about the benefits of the integration, during 2015 they will still be partial because of this process, but in 2016 we will have the full benefit and we'll give the guidance of the accumulated value of the benefit with this integration.
Okay, and on the staff costs, you will have lower around, I guess we could say, 5 million euros approximately from the adjustment on the benefits of for the employees. But the staff costs should increase because we have around 18 million euros higher in terms of the bonuses for management and employees and the 2% salary increases. When you say that this has no effect in terms of cash, you are including the financial costs, which is coming down also, correct? So on the EBITDA level, actually, this has a negative impact.
No. First of all, if you look at the financial costs, they are the big part of the financial cost. It's the interest that we pay to keep the present value of the employee benefits, which are not a cash cost. So it doesn't affect our cash position in the year. The big benefits or the benefits of the that we'll have in order to cope with the staff cost increase, first of all, the cost savings from the healthcare plan. Second of all, the cost savings that we'll have with the new company agreement, mainly because it will give us more flexibility. Second of all, because we eliminated some subsidies that were paid to employees because of past agreements with the employees being a public company. And third of all, and very important to remind, we will have a 40 million euros saving from the IT that will enable us also to absorb part of this cost and also some other efficiency measures that we are putting in place. It's very important that the employee cost or the staff cost coming from variable payments, it's not a fixed amount. It's an amount that will vary depending on the performance of the company. If you ask me, do the variable pay affect negatively our ability to deliver on the EBITDA? I don't think so. Because the first commitment that we have is to deliver on the EBITDA. If we don't deliver on the EBITDA, how can we pay to the compensation on performance if we are not able to reach the commitments that we did with our shareholders? So I don't think that is an issue, because it's the objective of the management of the company is to have everyone aligned with the targets that we settled to our shareholders.
Okay, and just two more issues. One is a clarification on the previous question. Francisco mentioned that the deal with Altice having a positive impact on the revenues and also at EBITDA, but the recurring high single-digit recurring growth at EBITDA level does not include Altice, correct?
No, probably includes Altice, coming from the framework agreement that we probably sign, we expect to sign, and from the 50 million, as I explained, the 50 million, it's a commitment from CTT not to negotiate with other telecom companies in the meanwhile. So for us, this means less revenues that we are getting from potentially having business being done with other telecom companies in all the business lines. Just to give you a brief overlook of the agreement that we want to reach with PT Portugal, it covers all the business lines or the business units of CTT. We have initiatives for the mail business, basically focused on the retail network that we have that can provide services to PT Portugal and have some overlap with their own retail network. In the parcel business, because we believe together we can put a very strong offer to the SMEs market in terms of e-commerce. And last but not least, in terms of financial services, you need to recall that Portugal Telecoms has the Mail Wallet, and also we are launching the Post Bank, and we can do some things together in order to promote our Post Bank and, in their case, to promote their services.
Okay. A final question on the financial services revenues for 2015. With the lower rates that the government is imposing that in their retail product, you obviously had a fantastic January, but for the remaining of the year, we should probably explain a sizable drop in terms of new subscriptions. How do you expect to evolve this revenue line, considering that you have a fee based on the stock of that you sold, but also that it's going to be much lower in terms of new subscriptions from here onwards. Thank you.
Regarding financial services, as I mentioned in the presentation, it's the diversification and the several product lines that we need to take into account to see the performance of financial service along the year. Regarding the product line of savings and insurance, even inside of savings and insurance, CTT has three partners for three different saving products. First of all, the public debt with the GCP, this product that you mentioned, the interest went down. Second of all, a partnership with Fidelidade for the selling of life insurance. As you know, it's a saving product. And last, we have a partnership with MAPS to sell pension plans or pension retirement programs to is also a saving product. As you said, in January was very strong. We did almost 50% what we did all along 2014, so we have a very good start. February and the future, what we expect is that public savings will go down and the other products in savings will go up because they will become more competitive. And that, although we don't expect to sell as much as we sold regarding public debt, the profitability we get from the products of Fidelidade and the profitability that we get from the products of MAF are quite higher, in some cases even the double, what we get with the sale of public debt products. So you need to bear in mind that although we will sell less public debt, potentially the impact in terms of revenues may not be relevant or even can be positive, because last but not least, you cannot forget that a big part of our revenues in this product line also comes from the stock that we sold in the previous years. So in 2015, we will get fees from the 5.5 billion that we sold in 2014, and also from the around 2 billion euros that were sold in January.
Thank you.
Mr. Stasi, does that answer your questions, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to give everybody a chance to signal for questions, and also due to limitations of time, could you please limit yourselves to one question each? Our next question today is coming from Christopher Coombe of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
I just want to follow up. I wanted to clarify my understanding on the recurring pieces. So for argument's sake, if bonuses were comparable to this year, next year, the basis would be around $128 million when we exclude the non-recurring effects. A year from now, when we're looking at the fiscal 15 results, is that the correct basis that you would look to? And I'm assuming, again, there's a neutral effect from the wage increases offset by the health care costs. With respect to bonuses, can you give us some sense of what the range of outcomes might be if you deliver below or just above guidance, what the range of outcomes might look like for incentive-based pay?
No, we cannot give. What we can tell is that our base in terms of the guidance that we give regarding EBITDA is the 135 million euros, not adjusted by the bonuses. So 135 commitment to mid single-digit growth, not discounting anything that you want to discount. We only pay variable payments if we have money to do it.
Okay, thank
without
you.
Without affecting our
okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, sir. We'll now go to Andy Jones of ARBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Yes, sorry, just one follow-up from me as well, and it's on variable pay too, I'm afraid. Would it be fair to assume that if your EBITDA is growing, that variable pay would also be growing year on year, or is there some element of catch-up in the 12.4 million that we've got this year? Thanks.
Yes, it would be fair to assume that if EBITDA is growing, dividends are growing, and variable payments are growing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, sir. And today's last question is coming from Maura Garbero of One Investments. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Sorry, I have to go back to the guidance. Just a clarification. So you said that the base is 135 million. So if I take a 5% growth, I come up to 142 million EBITDA in 2015. So in absolute terms, that means 7 million euros increase year over year. So rerunning the math for all the variables and extraordinaries, you have 15 million coming from RTs, 14 million cost savings from the IT, and then we can say that the healthcare benefit should have offset the variable salaries and the 2% increase in salary. So at the end, just purely on the RTs and the IT cost savings, I come up with the 29 million. And considering that the rest net each other, I'm struggling to understand your guidance of 7 million increase year over year, unless there is something I'm missing on the underlying.
Like the cost of the bank.
Like, for example, I don't know, the cost of the bank, or what are your assumptions there?
This is a mix of all the business that we need to manage. Our target is to have defending the value of the mail and having the two growth levers growing. Yes, can at the end of the year, if everything else had the same behavior of this year, this could mean yes. But you need to bear in mind that a part of the Altis potentially will not be accounted in 1 year. The 15 million euros, since it's an agreement for it's to make a 5 year agreement. If we do the same accounting that we did with BNP Paribas FLM, that if you recall, and it's in these figures, we had the 3 million up front, and now we decided to account it along the term of the contract, only 1 million up front, although we received in cash the 3 million, because in terms of accounting, it makes more sense to put it all along the life of the contract. If we do with the Altis, with the 30 million euros, the same behavior we did with the one with the BNP Paribas, that is something that we need still to negotiate with the auditors to see what is the best way to account it. We would be doing this along 5 years.
I think from what you, your calculations, Mara, I think in the terms of the variable payment and the company agreement revision and the healthcare impact, it's not exactly like that. But this is too many effects in a go. I suggest that you and Peter Zetskov you go through the thing again offline and to see exactly what are our assumptions and how we are giving this guidance. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, ma'am. As we have no further questions, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. De La Cerda for any additional or closing remarks. Thank you.
Just closing. Thank you very much. It has been a very exciting year, and I think we have done a very good year. We have exciting things for the future, and we have a quarter over quarter to go through the reality and the guidance to align things. The difficulty of having so many non-recurring effects is not only explaining them, but also the measuring all the impact that they have looking forward in terms of the evolution. But I'm sure that as in the past, we will be able to work with you and arrive to that clarity of view. Thank you. Bye.
Later.